comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth, that's a guarantee. Hope you had a good weekend. Did you have a good weekend? I hope you had a great weekend. I had a busy weekend, I can assure you. Yeah, we had to clean up after the mess left by all the hackers, but we got a lot done. I got a lot done, and so I feel good about it. We got the forums reinstalled. Now the forums in the members area have been sort of in a holding pattern. They've been in sort of a test phase. Because I had a new version of the software, and I wanted to see over a period of time how it performed. So it now has been moved back to where it belongs in the members area and fully installed. It weathered the hack attacks just fine. It was great. It didn't get hit. Got the chat software reinstalled. Now, for all of you members, that means, of course, when you go to forums, think about it. It's all reinstalled. It's new installed. You have to register in the forums. You have to register for chat. And once you've done that, then you can use them. Also, I got the software reinstalled for the K-Files e-zine. It did get hit. And they got hit severely. But that has been reinstalled. And by the way, everything has been hardened against hack attacks now. That certainly does not mean that it is an impregnable fortress. They can figure a way around it, and they will figure a way around it sooner or later, and we will get hit again. For 9 years, we've been battling and slugging it out with these hackers. And some of them, I guess, you know, are script kiddies. And they just, you know, they think it's cool. Mindless mushrooms, but they think it's cool. Some are of a more pernicious nature. And we won't get into all of that, but we are from time to time targeted by various people who don't want us to talk about the things we talk about here on the show. Sooner or later, they will find a way around it, and they will do it again. And we'll go through all this again. But we weathered this storm. And you know something? Each and every time, we weather the storm better than we did the time before. Have you noticed that? Each and every time, it takes us less time to get everything fixed than it did before. And that's because as they are learning how to get around things, I am learning how to keep them from doing some of the things that they've been doing. And it's a lot quicker to re-upload. So it's a learning curve for everybody. Well, tonight we are going to have some fun. I want to ask you, and it's a serious discussion as well, but is there life on Mars? We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we are going to be talking about tonight something pretty important. A paradigm shift, I think, is signaled by a report that has been filed with the president. And we're going to talk about that. It has to do with space exploration. Before we get into that, let me talk to you a little bit about how sometimes if you see a photograph, you assume things that maybe you should not assume. Now, I'm going to show you, for those of you who are on the KSS TV channel, I'm going to show you a picture of what used to be my backyard out in the Phoenix area. Now, what you're looking at is what I used to see when I looked out the back door of my house. It looks like Mars with cactus on it, but that is how the deserts of the Southwest look. Looks like Mars with cactus on it. It's about the same red that Mars is. Mars is that deep crimson red they used to show us in all those pictures, we now know is bunk. Mars is just about that color, but without cactus and trees and things like that. All right, so that is Arizona. Now, what I'm going to show you is something way out on the horizon. Keep in mind that in Phoenix, Arizona, there is a mosque just at the edge of Phoenix. So maybe that building on the edge out there, maybe that's the mosque in Phoenix. Maybe this is in Iraq. Maybe this is in Afghanistan. So what I would like for you to do is take a good look. Those of you who are watching on KSS TV, take a good look at this. And I'm going to take two or three calls here and let you guess where this is. Is this Arizona? Is this Iraq? Is this Afghanistan? Maybe it's in... pardon me. Maybe it's in Iran. Where is this? Okay. Now, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. And the person who gets this right is going to win a prize. The first person to get this right wins a prize. And this prize is a three-month membership to our members area. Absolutely free. Now, if you've already got a membership, not a problem. You can give this to whoever you would like. Okay? So the telephone number is 623-444-5889 or toll-free 888-223-4599. We already have one contestant. Contestant, your first name and where are you calling from? Hello, contestant. And we do not have a contestant on the line. Okay. So, we will try again. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hi, it's Bob from California.
Hi, Bob.
How's it going?
It's going good. Now, where is this? Is this Arizona, Iran, Iraq? Where is this?
Well, I just want to say you can pass the prize to someone else because I really enjoy pain. It's not very much a month. And my guess is going to be Mars. Thank you very much.
Your guess is Mars. Okay. A mosque on Mars. All righty. Caller, you are live. Your first name and where are you calling from? And the caller has hung up. Okay. We have time for one or two more to call in. And the telephone number is 623-444-5889. Where is this located? Is this in Arizona? Is this in Iraq? Is this in Iran? Where is this? Caller, your first name, and you are a contestant. Your first name and where are you calling from?
That's Mike from Mississippi.
Hi, Mike. Where is this?
I'm going to say it's an abandoned test site in Nevada.
Oh, good guess. Good guess. But no cigar. I'm sorry. That's not where it is. Thanks for calling. All right. Kind of looks like maybe one of those test site buildings, doesn't it? It sure does. All right. 623-444-5889. That's the number to call. And by the way, if you call in and take part in this contest, that's okay. You can call in later when we open the phone lines later. Not a problem. But where is this thing located? We've had one on Mars. We've had one as a test site in Nevada. And it does kind of have that look. You know, it kind of looks like one of those test areas out in Nevada. And you can tell that it's taken with this is a long ways away. The camera's a long ways from this building. So where do you think it is? The first person to get it right wins a 3-month free subscription to our members area, which, by the way, is all back up and running. And the K-Pods are all updated as promised. So where do you think it is? I'll put it back up there again. Well, here, we'll take this call. Caller, your first name, and where are you calling from?
This is Millie from California.
Yeah, Millie.
Hey, I think it's the moon.
You think it's on the moon?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that would be a good guess, but that's not it. But thanks for the call. Okay, let me show you. Well, we'll take one. This will be our final contestant here, okay? Contestant, your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Kevin from Northern Alberta calling.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, I got cut off earlier. I called in and then lost the line somewhere. But I'm just going to take a guess here. I'm going to say it's in Iran.
In Iran. Well, yeah, kind of looks like that, but no cigar, sorry.
No
thanks
cigar.
For the call. All right. Okay, that'll be the end of the contest. Bob is the one who actually got it right. He said he didn't want the prize because he's already a member. But this is from a photograph taken by the Mars Pathfinder. You know, it landed on the moon and deployed this little rover called the Sojourner. And what you were looking at is what is in that little red box you see on the screen. Now, I've done this for a reason. I've done this for a couple of reasons. One, I want you to see that when you look at these photographs that you get back, you know, that come back from Mars or from the moon, and you look at this and you say, well, there's nothing there. You know, it's just a bunch of rocks. That is what it looks like. Until you zoom in. And when you zoom in on that rock, look at that. Now, I don't know about you, but I have absolutely no doubt in my mind I'm looking at an artificial structure. I can even see a sort of round circular tank sitting on the left side of the building closest to us. And I see a little outbuilding a little further away, and I see a large building that has a dome structure on the top of it. And that, to me, is pretty darn clear. And that is what is in the little red square, the little dark spot in that little red square that you see on your screen. Absolutely astounding. Astounding. Now, why have I done this? I've done this because I am proposing tonight the possibility that there is a signal here in the news of a paradigm shift when it comes to space exploration. We've been talking now for some time about this panel, this committee that was put together, to their job was to go through NASA's budget and their programs and projects and make recommendations to the president regarding NASA. And the former CEO of Lockheed was the chairman of this panel. Well, they have now submitted their final report to the president. It's 155 pages. The final report puts a spin on things that I think is in the right direction. I've been a little nervous about it. You know, I've been saying, I'm not too sure that I really think this is a good thing, this panel, but let's wait for their final report. Let's see what they have to say. Well, what they've had to say has been pretty interesting. They've been through the NASA budget with a fine-tooth comb, and here is what Norman Augustine had to say in the report. Listen to this. The U.S. human spaceflight program appears to be on an unsustainable trajectory due to lack of funds. But then the report goes on and gives the it states that NASA is currently receiving $18 billion in their budget, and that $10 billion of that is spent on the human spaceflight programs. And in order for them to achieve the goals that were set during the Bush administration, which I think are lofty goals, and that is a return to the moon and then setting up some sort of permanent moon base, and then from there going on to Mars. In order to do that, they're going to have an additional $3 billion a year. Now, I have said, and look, I support that, but I have said, if we can throw billions and billions and hundreds of billions of dollars at companies like GM and Chrysler and what was it, AGI? Is that what it was? The insurance company. If we can do that in a bailout program, I don't think we can afford that. But if we're doing that, and we have done it, we certainly could double NASA's budget. Imagine that. GM got more money than NASA got. By far. And all they're doing is building cars. NASA is exploring the universe. And there are people that say, well, that's not all that important. You think so? Well, I'll tell you something. The things that NASA learns as they explore our solar system and the universe, the things that they learn have a huge impact on our lives here. Were it not for the science that comes out of NASA, no one would have ever known about the ozone layer thinning out when that was happening. No one would have ever known about global warming or global cooling or anything else happening. All of that is directly derivative of NASA's space exploration. Plus, a great many medical advances are made because of technologies that NASA invents, or that are invented for NASA. Well, these five recommendations, folks, these five recommendations are for the purpose of pushing NASA forward, not for the purpose of killing NASA. And I won't read all of these, but all of these, I mean, they deal with the fact that NASA's not going to have a spacecraft ready to fly if they retire the shuttle on schedule. They're not going to have another spacecraft ready to fly that can take astronauts into space. And in order to cover that, they've said, let's keep the shuttle missions extended. Let's keep those going for a while. And let's keep the space station running beyond its programmed, planned date of completion or demise. Let's keep that program going for another 5 years beyond that. And the whole thing is aimed at getting back to the moon. And then, you know, they said, you know, Mars is important, and ultimately that's where we need to head. But let's focus on getting back to the moon. And so that's what all of this is about. And I think it's a good report. And I think it's a paradigm shifter. It signals a possible paradigm shift in space exploration for the United States. Because this report is designed to put NASA back on the moon. This report is designed to get us out of low Earth orbit and out to the planets. The first step, of course, is not a planet. The first step is the moon of this planet, but it's a whale of a bunch farther away from Earth than that space station is. And so I think this is sort of a paradigm shifter, because it's a recognition that space exploration needs to be a high priority. Now listen to this, and then we're going to Mars. The committee concludes that the ultimate goal of human exploration is to chart a path for human expansion into the solar system. And so that brings up the question, folks, that you've heard me ask many times, and that is, do the conditions for life exist on other planets? I have, I think, proved, at least to a large degree, in the program I did about Venus, that of course the conditions for life exist. Maybe not your life, maybe not my life, but the conditions for life exist on virtually every planet. Life can arise in almost any conditions. Think about those of you who buy into evolution. Think about what the conditions were like on this planet when the very first life, the very first living organisms, when they happened. This was a most inhospitable place at the time. So we're going to look tonight at the question, does life exist on Mars? We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Is there life on Mars? I will tell you that just as I wrote a little e-book on the subject of Venus, I'm doing one on Mars. And it will not be ready for some time, because it will be quite a bit bigger than the one that deals with Venus. So it will be available soon, but not in the next couple of days. All of the pictures that you will see on the KSS TV channel tonight, the pictures you've just seen, and others that I will show you tonight, will be in that book, and many, many, many others. But there's just no way for us to do what we're going to do here tonight and for me to show you all of those pictures. But the point in all of this is to ask the question, is there life on Mars right now? And I cannot tell you that I believe that there is life on Mars. Nor can I tell you that I know that there are living organisms and perhaps intelligent life on Mars. I can't tell you that I know that. But I can point us to, I think, some pretty interesting information. Let me start off by asking you, do you know how many missions have been flown to Mars? All the different space agencies. There are four space agencies that have flown missions to Mars. Do you know how many missions? 39. What do you suspect would be the percentage of failure? Well, it's almost 59%. It's just above 58%. Now, that's a pretty high failure rate. But you have to understand that these missions to Mars, the attempts to fly missions to Mars, well, let me ask you, when do you think they began? Late 70s? Sometime after we went to the moon? No. In 1960, the former USSR, the Soviet Union, began trying to launch missions to Mars. And they're included in this list. Well, back then, of course, rocket launches failed frequently. Back then, rocket launches were failing frequently right here in the United States. They would blow up on the launch pad, or they would launch and get up to about, 500 feet and blow up, and all kinds of stuff was happening. We really didn't know what we needed to know. And by we, I mean both us and the Russians here on Earth, we really did not know at that point what we needed to know to build reliable launch vehicles. But that's when they started, 1960. There have been 39 missions. The Russians have had a tremendous failure rate. 88% of their missions to Mars have failed. But having said that, ours in the U.S. are about 38%, I think. Something like that, 38% have failed. But having said that, the Russian space agency's missions have about an 88% failure in going to Mars, the Mars missions, we have to include in that some very strange anomalies. Two of their missions, the satellite, the spacecraft, just flew past the planet, missed the planet altogether. Now, before you chuckle, remember that some of the best space scientists on this planet are in Russia. The Russians were first in space. You know that, don't you? Before the U.S. had anything in space, the Russians had a satellite. The first man in space was Russian. The first people to get something to the moon were Russians. The first people to have a space station were the Russians. And they had several space stations and successfully ran those missions. Long before we tried a space station called Skylab, and that was pretty much a colossal failure. There was one manned mission to Skylab, and they never sent people there again. So it's kind of mysterious that with all of their success in other parts of the space program, other things they were doing in space, with all their success, it's pretty mysterious that they had so many failures. They had like 10 or 11 missions to Mars in a row that failed. before they actually finally got one of their spacecraft over to Mars. What was going on? Well, again, in the early days, they just, nobody knew how to build reliable launch vehicles. So that accounts for some of it. But what about the ones that left Earth and headed to Mars? They had one that just disappeared on the way. They had two that just passed Mars. They know where they are. They just couldn't navigate them. Now, they were able to navigate these spacecraft all the way from Earth to Mars, but when it got near Mars, their ability to navigate the spacecraft, to control it, vanished. Their ability vanished. For some reason, the spacecraft just said, no, not going to do that, and just flew past Mars. What was going on? Was something interfering with the Russians' communications with those spacecraft? Was something interfering with the spacecraft? Now, you might say, well, that just seems sort of nutty. Well, I would say it would be a really far-out speculation if it were not for one particular mission. That one particular mission was called Phobos 2. Now, in the book, I go into detail about these various missions and what was happening and how it appears something weird took place. I mean, there's evidence that something weird took place with these spacecraft. We get to Phobos 2, we maybe find out what was taking place. Because when we get to Phobos 2, Phobos 2 sent back some photographs. It got to Mars. It successfully achieved orbit. Its primary function, it was going to take a few photographs of Mars and do a few infrared scans of Mars, and it did. And then it was going to turn its attention to the moon of Mars called Phobos. And it was going to do a very thorough exploration of Phobos. And so as it's photographing Mars, a shadow passes over the surface of Mars. And this shadow is a very long, thin football-shaped shadow, shaped like an American football or a rugby ball, but thin, not fat, thin, long elliptical shaped shadow. And it made big, big news. It was on Russian TV. Some of the space scientists were showing this on television in Russia, and they were talking about it. And they said, they were asked by newsmen in Russia if this maybe just could be an anomaly on the surface. And the scientists said, no, because we can see that it moves, and its position changes, so it's moving, and you can see through it, you can see the features of the surface. This is a shadow of something in space. Well, shortly after the Phobos 2 took those photographs of that shadow passing over Mars, it turns its attention back to the moon, Phobos. And as it turns its attention to Phobos, the Phobos 2 satellite took one of the most astounding photographs ever taken by any Mars mission. It photographed its own death. This is the last photograph that the Phobos 2 satellite shot. The large white area at the top of the photograph is the moon Phobos. And below that is a long, cigar-shaped, sort of cylindrical object. Now, the scientists that have looked at this have estimated that it is between 15 and 25 kilometers in length. That is not something that is normally and naturally in orbit around Mars. But there it is, hovering near Phobos, and that's the last photograph the satellite took, because right after snapping this photograph and sending that telemetry back to Earth, the Phobos 2 satellite was struck by something. How do we know it was struck by something? Well, because the telemetry coming from it was interrupted. And then there were short bursts of telemetry that came after that, and because of the Doppler effect, gave the impression to the controllers on Earth that Phobos 2 was spinning out of control. Phobos 2 photographed its assassin. In that particular case, I don't think there's any question that Phobos 2 ran into some life form that took exception to Phobos 2 being there. Just take a look at the spacecraft again. And I'm calling it a spacecraft because it is not a moon of Mars. It doesn't belong there. It's not there now, so far as we know. But there it is. It's too regular a shape. It's not. Look at Phobos, the moon. It's all kind of just a knot of rocks up there. And it's irregularly shaped. But this thing, 15 to 25 kilometers in length, this thing is very regularly shaped, appears to be thinner on one end. If you look at the top end, there's a little dip in it, and it's thinner on that end. So since it's not a natural moon of Mars and doesn't belong in orbit around Mars, it is a spacecraft. It's not an asteroid. It's not a comet. It's a spacecraft. Has it shown up anywhere else? We'll be back right after this. Remember that Halloween party now. That's important. If you don't have your ticket, get your ticket, because that is going to be a blast. It's going to be October 31st, Halloween evening, and we'll have a good time. So make sure you've got your ticket for that. All right. We're talking about, is there life on Mars? Now, the photograph that I showed at the beginning indicates that someone has been there. And look, this is one among thousands of photographs that show artificial structures on Mars. But is there life on Mars right now? Well, one of the best ways to find out if there is life on Mars is to find living plants and flying machines. Now think about flying machines. If there's something flying in the sky on Mars, then someone is likely flying it. Now, that doesn't look, we send unmanned vehicles over there, right? So, you know, just because there's something flying in the sky, that doesn't mean that it's got a pilot, that it's got a crew. But if you have something that is, say, 15 to 25 kilometers in length, and it's flying in the sky, something that big is not likely to be without personnel. So the question then is pretty simple. Has anything like that shown up since Phobos 2? As a matter of fact, in 2004, the Spirit rover had its cameras aimed at the sky, and it was taking a picture of Martian sunset. And it got a picture of something that looks very, very much like what Phobos 2 photographed. And the picture that it got, the commentary that came from NASA on this is, well, it's a streak of light. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that is not a streak of light. If you enlarge the photograph that I've got up on the screen, it shows a long cylindrical object flying through the sky on Mars. It has a beginning and an end, a definite beginning and a definite end, and a streak of light may have a definite beginning, like if you have a meteor coming through the sky, but the end of it trails off. Well, that has no trail off. It just ends. It has a beginning and an end. And whatever that is very long and looks very similar to what Phobos 2 photographed just before it was assassinated. The Martian airspace, if you will, appears to not be empty. The Martian airspace appears to be occupied. But is there any evidence beyond just the fact that the Russians had some weird stuff happen with their missions to Mars? Is there any other evidence of something strange happening in that airspace, that, and I mean space, around Mars? Well, yes. In 1996, NASA launched something called the Mars Global Surveyor. Now, the Mars Global Surveyor was a fantastic, reliable workhorse. And it worked beyond their wildest dreams for 10 years. In early November 2006, the Mars Global Surveyor did what it always does. It's orbiting Mars. So as it went around behind Mars, it lost communications with Earth. Normal. That always happened. It was supposed to orbit Mars, and when it comes back around the other side of Mars and reappears to Earth again, then it reestablishes communications with Earth and exploration continues. Well, in early November 2006, the Mars Global Surveyor went behind Mars and never came out. When it was time to reestablish communications, it didn't. Now, understand, these flight controllers on Earth have been controlling this spacecraft now for 10 years. So they know exactly where it's supposed to be. But they cannot establish communications with it. In 2005, they had launched a new satellite to Mars called the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. And it had all kinds of neat cameras, including high-resolution cameras on board. And so after trying to wake up the Mars Global Surveyor, and with no success, they agreed that what they would do is position the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter so that it could focus its high-powered cameras on the Mars Global Surveyor. They thought, well, if we can get a photograph of the MGS, the Mars Global Surveyor, maybe we can see something that's wrong, and then we can write a program that can correct that. So let's just get a look at it and see. So the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter was instructed to turn its cameras toward the Mars Global Surveyor, and it did. Except the Mars Global Surveyor was not there. In fact, there was not even any debris. Now, there have been explanations that, I mean, at first, you know, they were just baffled and, they, well, we don't know what happened. And then a panel was formed to investigate what happened, and we've never heard anything back from that, and I doubt we ever will. But the official story is they think that as it went behind Mars, it didn't turn the direction that it was supposed to turn, and so it overheated in the sunshine, and it caused the batteries, a battery on board, to explode, destroying the spaceship. Where's the debris? Now, when these two satellites collided just a few months ago above Earth, there's all kinds of debris flying around out there. And, you know, they're trying to track it. I mean, there are just thousands of bits of debris from that collision where those two satellites exploded. So there's a debris field. If the Mars Global Surveyor actually exploded, then there should be debris in the orbit where it had been. I know we probably have no capability on Earth of sitting here and looking at Mars and seeing the debris. I understand that. But the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter was right up there with it, and it does have that capability. It has the capability of picking up the smallest debris in its cameras, and space was just empty. There was no debris. The Mars Global Surveyor vanished. Now, there are a couple of possibilities, of course. One of the possibilities is that it was struck on the other side of Mars. It was struck by a meteorite that forced it into a crash dive into Mars. But again, there should be debris from the crash. Another possibility is that some very large unknown spacecraft came along and scooped it out of space, kind of like in the James Bond movies. That is a possibility. Wild, I understand, but a possibility. Another possibility is that some unknown spacecraft used some unknown kind of energy to simply vaporize the thing so that there was nothing left of it. Whatever happened to it, it didn't explode and it wasn't hit by a meteor, or there would be debris. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I'm going to open up the phone lines in just a minute, and I'd like for us to have kind of a freewheeling discussion on this. I would like for us, I mean, if you think that I am way off base when I open the phone lines, you can say so. You think I've really got this one wrong, you can say so. And if you think it's right, you can say so. But I want us to have kind of a very open, freewheeling, hard-nosed discussion about life on Mars. Now, Arthur C. Clarke is someone that all of you should be familiar with. Most of you are familiar with him because you have seen the movie 2001: A Space Odyssey, a real classic movie. Well, he is the one who wrote the novel 2001, A Space Odyssey. on which that movie is based. Sir Arthur C. Clarke, however, is not just a novel writer. He was a supreme science fiction writer. But not just that, he was a scientist too. How many of you use a cell phone, or in some countries you call them mobile phones? How many of you use them? Just about everyone. I don't, but just about everyone does. Well, you're able to do that because of Arthur C. Clarke. He is the person who first proposed, or if you will, invented, the geosynchronous orbit. That's where they put a satellite out in space, 22,000 miles out, and it's moving at exactly the pace it needs to in order to stay over the same spot on Earth at all times. How many of you have a one of those little GPS units in your car, you know, that guides you here and guides you there? Arthur C. Clarke, you couldn't do that. There would be no possibility of a GPS system without the geosynchronous orbit. Now, Arthur C. Clarke was a brilliant man. And when the Mars Global Surveyor sent back certain photographs, and he viewed them, Arthur C. Clarke said, "The debate is over as to whether there is life on Mars or not. There is life on Mars." And he was looking at several photographs, but specifically the one that caught his attention was one of a stand of trees that he said looked like banyan trees. Now, we're looking top down, but he said these look like banyan trees. And quite obviously, whatever they are, they're not rocks. Whatever they are, they appear to be plant life. Now, that's on Mars. Interestingly, there were some other photographs that he had responses to. And interestingly, some of those photographs show geysers. That's right. Spewing some clear liquid into the sky. Maybe water. Probably water. How do you know it's clear liquid? Because the pictures are black and white. How do you know that? Well, because you look at the base around the geyser. If it was like petroleum, if it was oil, or something with color, then the sand all around the opening in the soil where the geyser is spewing out would be discolored. And it isn't. So whatever that is spewing out of there is clear liquid. And they're spewing high up into the Martian sky. And there's one place on Mars where there's a field of these things. It looks like hundreds of them spewing all at the same time. So, is there water on Mars? Yes, there is water on Mars. And that's been confirmed. Is it possible for there to be liquid water on Mars? Well, as a matter of fact, in the book that I'm preparing now, that I'm writing now, I'll show you photographs of lakes on Mars. But is there life? Well, there's water. And they tell us that there can't be liquid water because the atmosphere is so thin that it would all just evaporate and vaporize instantly. Well, the fact that there is standing liquid water tells you that's not true. The fact that NASA planned to fly an airplane tells you that's not true. And I, by the way, do the atmospheric pressure calculations in the book so you can see for yourself how impossible that would be. But they were planning to fly an airplane, and the only reason that they didn't do it was budget cuts. They actually developed the plane to fly, though, and were going to do it, but the budget cuts took it out of the missions. So that tells you if they plan to fly an airplane and the physics, based on what they tell us the atmospheric pressure is, the physics won't allow for flying an airplane, then that tells you that what they've told us about the atmospheric pressure can't be true. Is there life on Mars? Something shot Phobos 2 as it began to explore the moon Phobos. Something shot it out of existence. and it got a photograph of what shot it. In 2004, a very similar object is seen in the skies above Mars by our own Spirit rover. Way too large to imagine that as an unmanned vehicle. Way too large for that. Arthur C. Clarke sees banyan trees in some pictures and says the debate is over. There is life on Mars. And in my book, I'll show you a couple of pictures of forests, thick forests, of what very clearly looks like pine trees. A photograph taken by Mars Global Surveyor, which, by the way, simply vanished from existence. So what we're going to do is we're going to open up the telephone lines, and I want to hear from you. See, I think this is serious business. I think that we need to think seriously about the question, is there life on Mars? Not just because it gives us some sort of science fiction thrill, but because if there is life on Mars, and if that life is intelligent, it quite obviously, I mean, somebody built the thing that assassinated Phobos 2. And if it's over there at Mars, quite obviously they are technologically advanced and apparently way ahead of us. If they are that close to us, if they're living on Mars, they're that close to us, there are real implications here. Not look, I guess, you know, if you think militarily, you think, well, we have to make sure we can defend ourselves against these guys. Okay, that's your job to think that way. So, and I don't denigrate it at all. But tonight, what I'm focused on is there are some real diplomatic issues that need to be looked at, and they call this exopolitics. The diplomatic issues that we need to look at, and by the way, the phone lines are open, 623-444-5889. Or 888-223-4599. The diplomatic issues that we need to look at have to do with, we are sending stuff over to Mars, and we're photographing, we're scanning with infrared, we're scanning with spectrometers, we're scanning with radar, and every once in a while we land on Mars. If that place is in fact inhabited, and if the indications are correct, the indications that I've shown you from Phobos 2 and from Spirit in 2004, if that place is inhabited and the indications are that it may be and that they are intelligent, are we setting ourselves up for trouble? Do we not need to be open and say it's inhabited and we're sending an ambassador to establish diplomatic relations? You may laugh and you may think this is crazy, but when you do, just explain the photos away. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Stefan from Quebec City, Kevin.
Hi, Stefan.
Kevin, I don't think it's crazy at all. I think the photos are almost self-explanatory, along with all of the other incidents, the disappearance of Phobos, the death of Tom Van Flanders. Whatever happened to that conference that Brian O'Leary and Tom Van Flanders had? Was there a follow-up on that?
I don't know. I don't know if it just...
off of Google Video.
Yeah, I don't know if it just went away or what. You're saying they took it off of Google Video?
It's nowhere on the internet. I think one would almost have to download it as a torrent, but on Google Video, it's definitely removed.
Some of the pictures from that conference are in my book.
Great.
Some of Tom Van Flanderen's photographs are in the book that I'm writing. And, you know, it's... I think his information was absolutely blockbuster information. We were fortunate enough that I was able to interview him not too long before he died, just a few months before he died.
And you consider also the pictures that he showed, they showed, where there were seemingly pyramid-type structures, house-like structures in rows,
yeah,
in several rows. It all adds up. I think it's almost ridiculous not to think that Mars, for certain, it once had life, I think, and possibly, even probably, has life today.
Well, you know, it's easy for me, I'll be honest about this, it's very easy for me to say I have no problem buying that there are ancient ruins on Mars that indicate that at one time there was an intelligent civilization there. I can buy that. But as I started researching for this book and ran across more and more information that you don't hear about too often, it was kind of a shock for me to come to the conclusion that I have, and that is, I'll tell you my conclusion. I don't know that it's inhabited, but my conclusion is that all the evidence points to current intelligent life on the planet. Now, when I say I ran across stuff that I didn't know existed, you know, we think back and to when Pathfinder was there. We all saw these photographs from Pathfinder. But I don't know anybody that has really gone over these photographs from Pathfinder with a fine-tooth comb. And when you do, what you find is something that looks very much like either a scientific kind of a facility or a mosque. I mean, it's shaped like a mosque. And it's sitting out there on the horizon.
Kevin, one thing I've always asked myself is that when they choose their landing sites, do they choose them randomly, or are they set and what I mean is that if we had to visit our own planet for the first time through a probe,
mm-hmm.
you could land it practically anywhere on the planet, and chances are like 50-50 that you would not see anything man-made from that probe, right?
Yeah.
You could land it in the middle of a desert, in the middle of the ocean, and on top of a mountain.
Most of the Earth is not inhabited.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, to see all of these pictures from Mars with artificiality within those pictures, I think is just absolutely fantastic. It probably means that Mars is or was more inhabited than the Earth itself.
Yeah, or they landed near those ruins on purpose.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Kevin.
Hey, thanks for the call. All right, what do you think about it? I'm not confused in what I think about this subject. On the other hand, I could be wrong. To me, it looks like all the evidence points toward current inhabitation, but maybe you see it differently. And I want to hear from you what you think about this. I think it's a big issue, and it's a big issue maybe even for the current administration. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, it's Mike from Kentucky.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, didn't we, you and I, have this discussion the other night?
Close to it.
We were going to take Kevin Knights and I'll go up there and check it out, right?
Yeah. So what do you think? Do you think it's currently inhabited by intelligent beings?
Based on a lot of information from different sources all around, yes, I do. And I think, like you, about those cigar-shaped vehicle or cylinder-shaped vehicle that took down the Phobos Russian mission. I think they probably are off of Phobos and that they're surveying Mars and protecting it. They're sort of like a military protection group up there, is what I think.
So you think they're based on the moon Phobos?
Yes.
And that they fly protection for the planet. So
right.
Why would they be protecting the planet? What's on the planet they want to protect? Is there a civilization of people of some kind on this planet?
Well, you know, that's pure speculation, as you know, but if you look at ufology as a whole, and you think about the alleged agreements that we have with so-called alien races here on this planet, Area 51 and other places, then I'm not sure that we don't have the same kind of agreement there, and that we probably have joint bases on Mars, and that they would be set up there to keep away unwanted eyes on certain areas.
Okay, now following that line of thinking, do you think the Russian missions were designed to go to places and examine places on Mars that are, shall we say, restricted? And that's why their satellites have met with such a high rate of destruction. Do you think that's it?
I don't think it's Mars, the planet that they were trying to look at. It's sort of what I call a backdoor play. I think the Russians and the Americans and possibly other countries have joint bases there. But maybe the Soviets were trying to sneak in the back door and get a good look at what's going on Phobos, something they've been denied.
So you think that the Americans and maybe others with the Americans have bases on Phobos?
No, on Mars.
On Mars.
Yet they are not given access to Phobos where the actual aliens would live.
Okay, so now I'm confused as to, in this scenario, why would the aliens on Phobos fly protection for these bases that are on Mars?
Perhaps, and this is pure speculation again, perhaps that those alien bases that are on Phobos, if they are not the same ones that show themselves to us here on Earth. Maybe they're sort of like, in the German way of saying, the master race.
Okay, but why would they be protecting these American and other nation bases on Mars?
I don't think they're protecting the bases on Mars from observation. I think they're protecting the bases on Phobos. In fact, I think the bases on Phobos are internal, and that satellite was trying to get a good close-up view of sort of like the opening.
Well, it did have an infrared scanner, and it did some infrared photography of Mars, but when it turned toward Phobos, it was staring down the barrel of a 25-kilometer spacecraft.
And that's when it got it.
Yeah.
It didn't get it when it was just trying to photograph Mars or scan Mars. It's when it turned its attention toward Phobos that it got nailed.
You're right. Well, that makes that's logical. That makes sense. And it would make a good plot for a movie.
Well, I'm surprised you hadn't already started the script.
I don't do fiction. So, I've tried. You know, the hardest thing in the world to write is fiction. It is absolutely difficult. People that write it, I guess, think it's not so difficult, but I find fiction to be the hardest thing in the world to write. Okay, Mike, thanks for the call, man. I got to move along.
All right. Thanks a lot, Kevin.
You bet. Okay, well, that's interesting. Interesting scenario. 623-444-5889 or toll free at 888-223-4599. As always, if you're outside the USA and you're outside of Canada, you don't want to make that international long distance call, you can send me a flash message by going to my website, scroll down, you'll see the link that says flash message. But you have to be outside the USA and outside of Canada. Inside the USA, inside of Canada, we have telephones and I'll even pay for the call. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, my name is Ron. I'm calling from Santa Fe, Texas. And I have a couple of things I'd like to talk with you about, Kevin.
Okay.
related to your Mars thing, I agree with you totally. I think there's something out there that's hammering these satellites and these probes and stuff. But my understanding was that these two satellites of Mars weren't even in existence until about the late 19th century.
You know, I have read that. I have also read that they're not there now. I read today on the internet that both Phobos and Deimos are no longer in orbit around Mars, and that any photographs you see coming from NASA or from the European Space Agency are bogus. Now, I don't know whether to believe that or not, but that's out there.
I'll be darned. I hadn't heard that.
Mm-hmm.
Something else I'd like to ask you. I'd like to donate some, give you some money, but I don't have any credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
I did not notice a mailing address. Do you have a mailing address?
I do. If you'll send me an email and tell me you need my mailing address, I will email that to you.
Okay.
Okay? Be sure you use our contact page to do that, because that will get you through the spam filters.
All righty, I'll do that.
Okay.
Third thing, I don't know if any other listeners have reported this, but when I listen to you live, and I've only done it, this is the fourth time, I get a voice that comes on and repeats a phrase through the whole program.
What phrase does it repeat?
Well, the first time it was I couldn't understand it. It was a phrase. It was a word that started with a B, and it just kept repeating through the whole program.
Huh.
The second time I listened, I've only done this about four times. The second time it was a phrase that says, "Listen to this," over and over and over.
Wow! And that's coming through your audio.
Yes. And tonight, it's saying, "I'm trying."
Huh?
And
do you have any way to record that and send it to me?
I can try. I see if I can.
Okay.
I'll give it a shot. But
all right. Listen, the break's taking over. What? Hang on through the break. I want to talk to you a little bit more.
Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah, hang on. All right. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Are you still with me, Ron?
Yes, I'm still here, Kevin.
Now, you said that as you listen to the show, you can hear another voice in there repeating a message over and over and over. Is that right?
That's correct.
And tonight, what is it saying?
It's saying, "I'm trying." And it just keeps repeating over and over. Maybe, I don't know what the intervals are, Kevin, but it's like it says, "I'm trying, I'm trying," over and over, and it only happens when I listen to you live, but I've only been able to listen to you live, I think, four times.
This is mysterious. I'll tell you, we've had weird stuff happen, Ron, through the years of this broadcast, but that's a first for us. That's a first.
Well, I just wondered if any of the your other listeners have experienced that.
Well, I don't know, but if they have, folks, if you are having that happen, be sure you tell me when you call in, and we'll talk about life on Mars, but we'll also talk about voices in the background.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. I thought something was wrong with my machine, but I don't think so. I don't know if somebody's hacking in or doing it. But it doesn't, if I listen to a recorded broadcast, it doesn't happen. It's only when you're live.
Yeah, and the reason for that is a recorded broadcast is captured before it leaves the studio.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so whatever's happening is happening after it leaves this studio.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just really strange. Like I say, the first one I couldn't understand. Second one kept saying something that I didn't write down, but it's something to the effect of, listen to this, you need to listen to this, that sort of tone to it. And tonight it's saying I'm trying.
Hmm.
Over and over. It's really bizarre. Really strange.
All right. Well, Ron, I appreciate the call. I'm sorry you're having that anomaly, but if you can record it for me, I'd love to hear it.
I will give it my best shot, Kevin.
All right, thanks.
See about recording. I love your show, and I agree with you about the Mars stuff. I mean, and especially somebody like caliber of Arthur C. Clarke says there's something there.
Yeah, you got to pay attention to someone like him.
Absolutely.
All right, man, thanks for the call, and like I say, I'm sorry that you're having that anomaly happen with the audio, but hey, weird stuff happens here at the Kevin Smith Show. I have a flash message from Andrew that says, he's in Australia, and he says, Soviet astronomer Iosif Shklovsky, back in 1959, was actually one of the first to suggest that Phobos might be hollow due to the rate of orbital decay. If this moon is hollow, it could suggest an artificial structure. I've got a bombshell for our moon regarding water in the soil and the lack of sufficient atmosphere. That's for another time. All right, Andrew. Outstanding. Let's go to the telephone and caller. You are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan in Washington.
Hi, Ryan.
Yeah, boy, we got no shortage of rain up here. Rainy Washington is back. We got so much rain that there's flooding already just from the rain up here. So.
Sorry to hear it.
Yeah, there's no shortage of water up here, that's for sure. It's I'm used to it though. This time of year, it rains all the way for a long time. But
well, what about life on Mars? Is it there, or am I loopy?
I think that I haven't seen a living creature with my own two eyes, but I see all the structures. So I have to say that. The best I can say is that there either was life there or there is life there now. I don't know which one, but it's hard to say. I mean, the evidence points towards there was or there is. And
well, I think with the evidence that we have, we can say 100% for sure there has been. There has right. been at some time intelligent life on Mars, because there are buildings, and when you have buildings, there were builders. Okay, now whether they are there now or not, I think is a big question. I will say that I have concluded that someone is in that airspace. Someone is flying a big cylindrical object in that airspace.
You got that right, yeah. Absolutely.
Now, they may not be from Mars. They may not live on Mars. Yeah. They may live on the spacecraft itself.
Yeah, and you really think Obama has this on his mind right now? You think he even has it on his agenda? Are you hearing something else, or what are you hearing about that?
Well, he's been presented with a presidential briefing, on extraterrestrial presence.
What can you go into detail about that? Where did you hear about that?
Dr. Stephen Greer, go to his website. Dr. Stephen Greer prepared and then presented to the president and to another head of state, one of the G7, prepared and presented this briefing to both of them.
Well, now, was this in person or?
I don't know. But you can read the briefing.
Yeah, I'll check that out.
Yeah, the briefing is out, and you can read that. And
I always wonder if it's. I mean, he's never seemed to really say anything about space at all. He's always been into the problems that we have. You know, he even said that during the debate. He didn't seem to have any interest in it. So I tried calling that press secretary one time, and you know, I just. Nobody else seems to have any desire to put the pressure on them to do something about it. So I, you know,
Look, anytime a politician doesn't want to talk about something, it's because it's too hot. That means that the pressure is on. That means that big things are happening, and they don't want to talk about it. The things they are willing to come out and talk about are the things, it's like a puppet show. The things that are easy for them to pull the strings on, that's what they'll talk about in public.
Well, okay. I didn't know if the president even there's millions of people that are interested in this stuff. I'm sure Mike probably knows more about this than me, and I might maybe he'll call back or something, but there's millions of people that are interested in it because of the media that refuses to report on this. They want to report on the silliness, the Balloon Boy story, and go on the line of the silliness they report on, but there's millions of people that are interested in this, and it's just they keep it from exploding into something. You know what I'm trying to say, though?
Yeah, but see, that's what I was saying with this report that's just been handed to the president from this commission that's been through NASA. It now appears that rather than trying to kill NASA, this commission was doing a report to hand the president, at least it appears this way, a report that gives the president a ground to stand on with Congress and say, we need this money. And the five recommendations take us back to Mars, or back to the moon, I'm sorry, and then on to Mars. So, you know, I think that what's happening is very quietly, things like that report are coming in that add to the ammunition that he's got to be able to move us forward, perhaps towards disclosure, I hope.
Well, you know, I think they're afraid to open let the whole can of worms start a little bit, the whole thing comes out, but...
Well, the can of worms is open. They may as well just go ahead and dump the worms on the table. The can of worms is open, and the public's already looking inside the can. And it's not secret anymore. They may as well just go ahead and dump the worms on the table.
Well, we'll see what happens.
There's
so much that normal civilians can do, like me and you and everybody else. We can only share our voices and let our voices be heard, but we just have to kind of wait for our politicians.
You're right. And listen, thanks for the call, but you're right. In as a matter of fact, you used a good phrase, wait for the politicians. The politicians are playing catch up on this issue. The politicians are having to run to catch up with the public that elected them, because we are way ahead of them on this, and they might make it up into the 20th century soon on this issue. We shall see. The telephone number is 623-444-5889, and the toll-free number is 888-223-4599. Is there life on Mars? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Mike from Mississippi.
Hi, Mike.
I was wanting to know where you had seen the information that both of Mars's moons was not in orbit anymore.
Oh, it's on the internet. It's certainly not any kind of official scientific thing, but that's a report that's out there on the internet. There are two or three sites I ran across today that had that on it. I have a difficult time buying that. I think they are out there, but that is one of the stories that's out, is that these two moons of Mars have disappeared. I don't have a telescope, so I can't tell, but I would find that difficult to buy.
Well, I don't know if a telescope, unless you go to an observatory, but I was heard about a couple years ago, it might have been a little bit less than that, that this is another thing that's been going around, is that both of those moons have actually become locked into Earth's orbit now. And they can only be seen when a solar eclipse occurs. And I kind of, you know, you can take that for what it's worth, but I was looking at a lot of pictures, and they got some really good, high-quality photos, you know, up real close of Phobos on Open Minds forums, and you can definitely see structures and, you know, everything is clear as day, and I mean, it's, you can see photos this clear, you know, this sharp. Mm-hmm. You can't even see the ones of the moon like that, and you can get Phobos, you know, and it's
kind of mysterious, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, and I've seen another photo of Phobos. You know, it was taken pretty far away, and you can see Mars in the view, and it's like there is no way Phobos is that small. You know, it's like an asteroid. It's what it looks like, an asteroid just floating in space.
Yeah, it is not big at all. It's about, I think it's about 9 miles around it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it ain't very big, but I mean, and then that rumor I was hearing a couple of years ago that it's you know, that both of those moons could be locked into Earth's orbit, and it can only be seen during solar eclipse. You know, it might have some credence to it, but kind of seems far out though.
Yeah, you said your name is Mike, right?
Yeah.
Mike, you want to hang on through the break?
Yeah, sure.
All right, hang on. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we are on final approach. That means we only have a few minutes left, and so if you're planning to call, we'll have time for maybe one more call after this one, and that'll just about wrap it for us. Remember the Halloween party. Get your ticket. All right, we're talking with Mike, I believe you said, in Mississippi, right?
Yeah.
Okay, now, Mike, you said that these moons are in an Earth, they're locked into an Earth orbit.
Well, this is what I have heard. I think it was something to Project Camelot. I'm not sure where I've heard this from.
Okay.
But when I was doing some, you know, research, you know, on these moons and everything, if they were to be locked into Earth's orbit, I don't think you would be able to really see them.
So they would always be on the other side of Mars from the Earth. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, if what I'm saying is, if the moons, you know, were in our orbit, I think due to the size of them, I just don't think they would be able to, you would be able to really see them at night. They might just look like a little bitty star, you know, out in the distance. That's probably how they would look. The pictures I've seen, these things look very small.
Well, that is something I'll look into. I had not heard that, but I'll look into that. Mike, are you a first-time caller?
No, I've called a few times before.
Okay. Well, I thank you for your call again this time.
All right. Thanks, Kev.
All right. The telephone line is open. Are you trying to call? If you are, now's the time. We have a flash message from Norway, from Paul, and he was watching a recent documentary on the History Channel about the Moon, Mars, and NASA, and in this show, he says, it was stated that in the early 1980, NASA released info that there is microscopic life on Mars. They also stated how this was kind of swept under the carpet, so to speak. Now, it's my opinion, if there is one type of life found, then I'm sure there's more. What's your take on this? And he says, sorry if there are any typos. It's 4:30 in the morning here. Paul, I appreciate you for being up at 4:30 and listening or watching the show. My take is yes. If there's any kind of life, there's probably every kind of life. Well, when I say every, I mean a huge variety of types of life on Mars. Yeah, I think you're spot on. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
Hi. I just got one quick thing. I wonder if you heard this. I was watching the History Channel, and they were talking about the rovers that, you know, were detecting life on the moon, and they were, burning the stuff in them ovens, which, in fact, was destroying any proof of flesh or bacteria or whatever that they could detect of life on Mars, and that's now a big issue and a talking point at NASA about how they did things and what they should do in the future. I just wonder if you heard about that.
Yeah, I have heard about that. However, if you burn any kind of organism, it does destroy it, but the molecules that are released can be detected as being organic or not, and in some cases biological or not. So, I've heard the debate. I'm not sure that that's a problem, really, because, you know, if you take, let's say you have some hair from a black bear or a grizzly bear, and you burn it, and you have the scientific sensor sniff the smoke coming off of that, it will tell you whether that is an organic material or not. And in fact, it is. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that's a really valid argument, but I am aware that there are scientists that are debating that.
Yeah, I just, I heard that, and, you know, I don't really know the facts behind it, you know, but I just found that, you know, kind of fascinating that they're bringing that out at this point. So, and I didn't know if you heard about it or not.
But I'll tell you this, what they don't want to go burn something, they don't want to use that experiment over on Titan. They'll blow up the whole planet, or the whole moon. It's full of methane, so you don't want to burn anything over there.
Yeah, well, we'd hope they'd get a little smarter here.
Yeah. Well, there's a group of scientists in Austria that are developing ways to detect life that is not based on carbon and oxygen. Mm-hmm. We are. And
right.
So they're trying to figure out ways to detect life that may be based on methane or may be based on sulfuric acid.
Yeah, I mean, that's, that'd be a mind bender, you know, to try and figure out how to detect something that, you know, could be anything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
One of the best ways, though, Terry, is for them to switch on their minds. I'm serious. Get rid of the built-in barriers that say it can't be, and mm-hmm. accept the fact that not only can it be, it probably is. Now let's look. If you do that, you have a better chance of finding signs of life.
Yeah, and then what do we do with it? You know,
how
to contact it? What is it? You know.
I'm not sure that you could ever send an Earth ambassador to a planet that's based on sulfuric acid or methane. But, what do we do with it once we find it? But, see, one thing about finding it is it proves that life happens. And, you know, I think life happens, and I think it happens within the context that it's in. So if it's a planet where everything is based on... if it's carbon dioxide, if that's the main thing, then life there would eat and breathe carbon dioxide.
I believe there's more life out there, more today. I'm more sure of it than I've ever been, so far in my life. So it's getting interesting. I think NASA's, it's not the scientists. I think it's just, it's the red tape and the rhetoric, and there's smarter people there than what they act like.
Oh, the scientists are brilliant. But you're right, there is that bureaucratic cap on them about what they can say and where they can say it. Terry, I've got to run. We're almost out of time. Thanks for the call. Folks, remember the Halloween party. If you're interested in that show we did on Venus, the ebook is available on the website now. It's $9. You get that, and you get to see the show again. Also, the photograph that we used for the show tonight, showing all these little Martians with a sign that says Yankee Go Home and Mars for Martians. I don't know who did that photograph. I looked. I wanted to give credit. I don't know who did it. If you're the person that made this photograph, I want to give you credit for it. And what a great little photograph this is. But I want to give you credit for it. So please just send me an email and let me know if you're the person. I'll be glad to put you in the credits and make sure that we give you proper recognition for doing that picture, a great little picture. We'll be back tomorrow night with more exciting stuff right here at the Kevin Smith Show. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.